Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Mind Shifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice. I'm Jeannie Rice, your co-host. We also have co-hosts Dr. Tim Hayes and Michelle Bichette. We will share with you the wisdom of the first century Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. We offer tools and support 5 days a week. We will support you in building a solid foundation within yourself to live in pure love, in Aramaic, Brachma. Michael is the author of the book, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? For more information about the forgiveness process, please visit www.whyagain.org. And now, welcome to the show, Mind Shifters Radio.
Hello and welcome to Mind Shifters Radio. I'm Tim Hayes. I'm your host for the first hour. And today is Monday, January 14th, 2022. And as always, we're grateful to everyone who's joining us here today, whether you're listening live or through the archives, as we spend another couple of hours teaching and supporting people in using some of the most powerful, effective, efficient, and accessible tools that I've ever encountered. These tools are available absolutely free at whyagain.org. If you go to that website and click on the Start Here link in the upper left-hand corner, it will take you to a page where you can download and read Chapter 24 of Dr. Michael Rice's book. The book is titled, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? And that particular chapter of the book contains a narrative description of the primary tool in this work. That tool is called the Reality Management Worksheet, sometimes called the Reality Management Wake-Up Sheet. And it's a tool I've been using to great effect for almost 18 years to improve the quality of my life and most of my relationships and to turn any negative emotional state I experience into part of the infallible guidance system that each one of us has been given. You can also download the actual worksheet process itself. It's a PDF file. Simple download, print it off, copy it, and use it as often as you'd like. You can also go to your app store and type in the three words Heartland Aramaic Forgiveness and get access to a completely free and private app that contains the Reality Management Worksheet, an abbreviated version of that worksheet process, and a copy of the Dragon Klingon game, which is a wonderful way to introduce these tools to even younger audiences. You can also download a whole host of audio files of shows just like this one where people have actually been stepped through the worksheet process and or called in with powerful testimonials about how the use of that set of tools has improved their quality of life. You can also go to the MindShiftersAcademy.org website and get access to information about how to join us in a support group either Tuesday night or Thursday night from 6:30 to 9 p.m. Central Time. It's free to join. The information to log in through Zoom is there. Please remember, if you're doing that, there's a separate login ID for Tuesday and Thursday. And we encourage you to do any and all of those things to get exposure to this work. Try it for yourself, because that frequently results in people having comments or questions or testimonials. And if you have any of that to share with us, please give us a call at 563-999-3581. Call that number and press 1, and we can have a conversation. It is far easier for us to live into our intention with this work, which is to be of service, when people call in and let us know what they're dealing with, how familiar or unfamiliar they are with this work, what makes sense about it, how we might assist them in applying it in their lives, etc. And Last year we finished going through the Course in Miracles lessons of the workbook and the corresponding material from Pam Grout's book, Course in Miracles Experiment. And this year we are working our way into and through the Way of Mastery. We started last Monday, and now we're still in the first lesson. We read through the first lesson, and then we went back and kept reading. The reason for this is because this work at the Way of Mastery as a set of tools is, I don't know what you could say. You could say dense. You could say deep, rich, powerful. It's not the kind of thing that you're going to get a whole lot out of if you just read it like a textbook and read it once through. As we talked about from the intro and the promise given from the author, that these three books that comprise the Way of Mastery, the Way of the Heart, the Way of Transformation, and the Way of Knowing, they're part of a set of teachings that have as their sole goal helping people wake up to the fact that each individual has access to the one mind, to the Christ mind, to guidance, to intuition, to a link to the great comforter, the Holy Spirit, creativity, whatever you want to call it, the collective unconscious. Everybody has the potential to connect with that and get guidance for themselves directly from the source. So the point of this book is to help people awaken within themselves their ability to connect with that higher wisdom. And when we left off on Friday, we had been reading again through the first lesson, and we ended with the following reading. Rest assured, whenever you feel frustration and anxiety, it is because you have decided not to trust the truth. And the truth, capital T truth, that they're referring to is this. Only God's plan for salvation can work for you. Only the flow of creation as it unfolds can hold for you the joy, the connection, the compassion, the contentment that your heart desires. Your way, the conscious logical mind's idea about how the world should unfold, must always fail, especially when it conflicts with allowance, surrender, the intention to stay aligned with the creative flow, etc. Because your way begins with the illusory and insane assumption that you are a separate being from the mind of the creation. And you must therefore direct your own course. Yet all the greatest minds, whether they're in science or they're in spiritual realm, say we're all connected. You have arisen as a part of the creative flow. So your way must always fail because your way begins with the illusory and insane assumption that you're a separate being from the mind of the Creator. And you must therefore direct your own course. For if you are sick and diseased and not at peace, why would you decide that you know how to create peace? It requires great humility to accept the first step of the path. And this is how they summarize the first step of the path. I have done all of this, and I must undo it. but I have no idea how I did this. Therefore, I must surrender to something else. Surrender to what? Well, call it whatever you'd like. Call it God, call it light, call it love, call it truth, call it the flow of creation, call it life itself. I must surrender to something other than my conscious logical mind. The book goes on to say, I give you this thought, and I would ask that you consider it well. What if the very life you are living, your life as you listen to this, and each and every experience that is coming to you now since the moment that you decided, quote, I've got to awaken here, close quotes, what if all of it was being directly sent to you of creation because creation knows what is necessary to unravel within your consciousness in order to allow you to awaken? We have a bunch of distorted notions. We have a bunch of false perceptions. We have a bunch of conditioning from our family and our culture that's negative in its core, in its root, in its structure. And all of that needs to unravel in order for us to awaken. And what if, and here's the thought, we're asked to consider this thought very, very well. What if the very life I'm living now, the very life you're living now, each and every experience that's coming to you now was being directly sent to you of your father, mother, of the creation, of the flow of life, because life knows what is necessary to unravel within your consciousness all of those false perceptions, all of that negativity, all of that family and cultural conditioning. Because that needs to unravel in order to allow you to awaken. What if the very things you're resisting and you see them as roadblocks, what if they're not roadblocks? What if they're stepping stones to your homecoming? What if it is the path? What if you achieved a maturity along this pathway in which you were finally willing, and this is really tough for the Western mind, what if you were finally willing to let things be just as they are? That takes a tremendous flexibility and maturity and strength. The book goes on to say, if it was necessary to sweep the streets, you simply took a deep breath and said, okay, Creator, you know the way home, so I'll begin sweeping. And then up into my mind would come the thought, oh my God, I won't be recognized. I won't stand out. People won't think I'm special if I'm just a street sweeper. And then I recognize, aha, no wonder life wants me to do this. I've got to flush this up so I can look at it, disidentify from all of this notion of specialness, and learn to be the presence of love in the sweeping of the street. In truth, I tell you that the least among you, according to your perception, is already equal to the greatest, and there is none among you who is less than I am. We're all the same. The essence of this book, the essence of the message of this book is, here's the truth that is true always. You remain as your Creator created you to be. You're no better or worse than anybody else. You have no more value or less value than any person that's ever lived. The book goes on to say, the way of the heart begins by accepting the humility that you have created quite a mess within your consciousness. You have created a labyrinth and gotten lost within it, and you do not know the way back. It begins by accepting that of yourself you can do nothing. For all you have managed to achieve is the creation of a whole lot of insane dramas. And these dramas are occurring nowhere except within the field of your own mind. They are like chimeras, like dreams. In truth, there is no difference between a waking state in which you would be the director of your life and the dreams you have when the body sleeps at night. They're both the same. If you think you're the director of your life, you're asleep, you're dreaming. Life is living through you. Life is breathing through you, seeing through you, acting through you. The book goes on to say, I wish to direct you to peace, even that peace which forever transcends the understanding and comprehension of the world. I desire, because my Father desires it through me, to bring you wholly and completely to where I am, that you might discover there is somewhere and someone that got there ahead of you. And when you look closely, you will say, huh, this is myself, capital S self. This is my true being. I've always been here, but I forgot. In the end of all journeying, in the end of all purification, and indeed purification is necessary, in the end of all journeying and purification, you will discover that to awaken means to have journeyed nowhere. It means to have arrived at a goal that has never changed. Awakening is only remembrance, but it is a remembrance not just of the intellect. It is not an idea, as you would understand ideas. It is an idea that vibrates through the whole field of your beingness so that even the cells of the body, while yet the body remains coalesced together in its present form, even the cells of the body awaken and relax into the truth, capital T truth, that is true always. If you were a gardener, would you not cultivate the art of weeding your garden? Would you not look to see that the soil is the correct dampness? Would you not keep your eye on the clouds on the horizon and the heat of the day? Would you not cover the delicate plants that need protection while they grow until they are strong? And if those who would come would not respect your garden, would you not ask them to leave or build a temporary fence until the garden is strong enough? Until the garden bursts forth with enough fruit so that you can give to even those who do not respect it? Be you, therefore, a wise gardener. Cultivate within yourself a deep love and respect for yourself, because you are not here to fix anything in the world. You are not here to fix your brother or sister. It is only love that heals things. And you have, until you have loved yourself wholly and completely, by having purified the mind of every erroneous thought you've ever held, until you see yourself as the energy of love, until you have loved yourself, you do not in truth love anyone or anything. Until you see yourself as the essence of creation expressing in form, you're not seeing yourself clearly, and you will not see your brothers and sisters and the world around you clearly. Sometimes in those brief moments when you let your guard down and the love of God shines forth through you so quickly that you don't even know what happened, you might experience that love. But until that is your awareness, you don't love anyone or anything. The wise gardener cultivates a state of consciousness in which the love of creation is unimpeded. Beloved friends, those of you that have elected to answer a call to participate in this pathway with this family, if you would make your commitment to trusting your Creator for having set before you a pathway that can lead you home, then you will indeed arrive at home. But commitment means that you do not get to leave the room when the shouting begins. The shouting we're speaking of here is the shouting within your own mind, within your own body, within your own consciousness, within your own emotions. It means that you will stay with these things by being honest about them and loving yourself for ever having the power to even create such insane perceptions of yourself and the world around you. The way of the heart is the final pathway that any soul can enter. There are many stages of awakening. There are many pathways that can be followed. But ultimately, all roads lead to Rome, as they say. Eventually, each soul must find its way into the way of the heart. Each soul must come back to the truth that it is time to take responsibility, to learn to cultivate the ability to look upon the deep and vicious blackness of what I have called ego. This ego thing is nothing more than the cesspool of denial. Denial of what? Denial of the fact that I'm the one that creates my experience by where I choose to focus my conscious awareness in each moment. This ego, this cesspool of denial, is what lacks light. So, begin to bring light, the light of conscious awareness, back to it by simply observing your own mind, your own behavior, and your own reactions, and observe them with a sense of wonder, with a sense of innocence, with a sense of childlikeness. For is it not written that you must again become a little child in order to enter the kingdom? The little child simply marvels at all that they see and says, well, how about that? Can you imagine looking upon the deepest, darkest parts of your own shadow, your own denials, and being able to say, huh, how about that? Remember, everything is neutral, and all that arises within your consciousness has no effect upon the truth of your reality, what Michael Rice would call your own actuality. The way of the heart is a way of cultivating the decision to become identified with the light, capital L light, that can shine away all darkness. Not by fighting with it, but by recognizing it, embracing it as your own creation, and then choosing again. We're not asked to fight the darkness. We're not asked to pretend the darkness is real and pick up weapons and tools against it. We're asked to see with complete openness and honesty that the darkness is our distorted perception, is our creation. The way of the heart is a way of cultivating the decision to become identified with the light of pure awareness, the light of absolute honesty and openness, because that light can shine away all darkness. We shine away the darkness not by fighting with it, but by recognizing it, embracing it as our own creation, and then choosing again. The way of the heart is the way that I teach. And now we begin a focused, in-depth study together that this way might become established within your holy mind. The way of the heart calls you home. Remember that the truth is true always. How many times in this book do you hear that sentence? Remember, the truth is true always. What's the truth that's referring to? You remain as you were created to be. There is nothing except the light of creation, the energy of creation extending forward. Is it not time, beloved friends, to truly step into ownership of your only reality? The way of the heart does not know the word avoidance. It does not know deception, manipulation, or control. The way of the heart does not know blame. Although it watches these things arise as echoes of old patterns that are now outgrown, it learns to see them, to recognize them, like you might recognize certain kinds of clouds that pass through the sky. And then it learns to turn the attention of the mind that a new choice might be made. The way of the heart is the way that calls you home. And the call comes from that deep part of your soul that is still. It's quiet, like unto the Holy Spirit, unto the Spirit of all the one mind, which abides in Christ's mind and in the holy mind of the Creator. Trust then that you are as a sunbeam to the sun. Trust not the perceptions you've cultivated in error. You are not alone on the way that you journey, and your journey is part of your brothers and sisters. You are not apart from them. This family cannot know separation. For once the call to awaken through this lineage has been acknowledged, though some bodies may not communicate in space and time, rest assured communication remains, and there is no way to avoid it. We begin now the way of the heart. It is time to step into the willingness to don the mantle of one committed to healing every obstacle to the presence of love, every obstacle that may yet remain secretly hidden in the depths of that part of your mind that would struggle to be separate from the Creator. And remember that you are truly the light that can come to shine lovingly upon every aspect of darkness you've known. Along the pathway of this course, you're going to learn how to shake hands with the devil, how to do a little jig with him, and recognize his face to be your own. When you can dance with the darkness that you have created, that darkness is transformed into an angel, and light abides with light. We will be giving you certain meditations and certain energetic practices to help cultivate within you a quality of feeling that will allow you to recognize energies that do not serve you. They will be given in a way that transcends what your mind may choose to think of. So that you learn more and more to lead with the body, lead with your feeling nature and not your intellect. Your intellect does not know anything except the trivialities that you have shoved into it, like garbage into a garbage can. The intellect can never bring the healing of the heart that is the atonement. It can only be utilized to argue against the insane perceptions that you're used to. If you learn to argue against those insane perceptions, you might come to see that perhaps there is a greater good in giving up your insistence on treating the intellect as your God. Therefore, indeed, beloved friends, dance, rejoice, and play often. Let these lessons bring up within you everything that's unworthy of the mind of Christ. Every thought of scarcity, every sense of unworthiness, and every fear. Let them come up, look at them, embrace them, and transmute them through your own love of self and through your honesty. Accept where you are and do not pretend to be otherwise. For the wisest are always the most humble. Be you therefore, beloved friends, at peace in all things. For we, in what you would call a disembodied state, who are electing to participate with those of you who are asking to be helped through this pathway, we delight in joining with you. We delight in loving you. We delight in waiting on you, to welcome yourself home. I would ask that you close your eyes for just a moment. Take a deep breath into the body and let it go. As the breath leaves the body, hold the thought that there is nothing worth holding on to any longer that keeps your peace and happiness at arm's length. Become committed, fully committed, to the experience of happiness, even as you have been fully committed to unhappiness, to imitation and limitation and lack. Give your Creator full permission to sweep the basement clean. There really is not anything down there worth defending or protecting. It will come to pass that you will know the perfect peace of empty-headedness, not knowingness. You will know what it means to be relieved of time and to be comforted by what is eternal. Never once let yourself think that you are alone. It is nonsense for you to think that I am not with you. You have asked, I have responded. We are in communication. That is the way it is. And that is the way it will be until the end of all illusion. Peace be unto you always. Amen. That is the, once again, we're at the end of lesson one. And we have a little less than half an hour for comments, questions, answers, suggestions, refutations, soliloquies. Our call-in number is 563-999-3581. When you call that number, if you press 1, it will let me know that you have a comment or a question, a testimonial, an answer, or a commentary, a refutation of what we're saying or sharing. Does this sound insane, letting go of all your negative thoughts? Does this sound insane that you are the one who is creating everything you experience by how you're choosing to focus the energy of your conscious awareness? Does this sound like something that you've heard many times before in many, many ways, but never quite like this? 563-999-3581. Area code 541, you're in the air.
Yes, Dr. Tim, this is Celinda.
Welcome.
Thank you for going through this. I'm reading it a little bit ahead of you so that I can really listen to your commentaries that you add with it. And this is a blockbuster section you wrote today for me. Also, I mentioned the other day, I believe, that I chose a word for the year, and my word was abide. And what's interesting to me, this comes from a little book called One Word, written by three gentlemen, and how they did a challenge with each other that they would just take one word for a year and see and focus on that word and meditate on that word and pray that word and see how it unfolded in their lives and unfolded their lives. And the results were apparently amazing, and now it has kind of spread. There are thousands of groups and individuals who use one word for the whole year. Well, I chose abide because I kind of just let it settle the words that I was considering, and that was the word that came up for me. And what's, I think, so amazing about that word is you don't hear it very often in common English, but I'm finding it everywhere on the pages of the Way of Mastery. And it's just like a little wake-up call every time I find it. So I just wanted to share that with you. And I'm excited to see how it abide, the word abide, and that energy in that word unfolds my life this year.
Well, that's a powerful practice. And, you know, the energetic associations that we have, positive and negative, for a word, they get resonated in us even if we're not conscious of them. So to make it conscious means we get to have some agency in how it affects us.
That's a very, very interesting perception. Thank you.
Well, Michael Rice is fond of saying in some of his older workshops, he would say, the strongest frequency that's resonating in you that you're not aware of will drive your behavior. It'll drive your perception, and then it will drive your behavior. So that's why it's so important for us to uncover the bias and the unconscious, because the strongest energy that's active in us that we're not aware of will drive our behavior.
And upon that willingness to become conscious of something, regardless of its emotional energy, is actually our point of freedom. Because then we can choose. That's a question.
Yeah. Well, because I can't have agency over something I'm not aware of. I can affect it without being aware of it. The energies that are resonating in me can affect me without my awareness, but I can't direct it without conscious awareness. So that's why so many of the tools that Michael Rice has are specifically designed to increase my awareness of what I'm hiding from myself, to discover, uncover the unconscious, the stuff that I've turned away from, that I have fear about. There's nothing in my consciousness that's bad for me to see. Guy Finley says it this way. He says, there's no such thing as bad self-knowledge. And yet, you know, there's the idea that my unconscious, the stuff that's in me that I'm afraid to look at, that I've turned away from, that's literally what creates my unconscious. So how do I correct that? Well, Michael Rice is put together a whole series of tools that help me correct pattern of hiding from stuff within myself, because the tools specifically help me stir up and bring to conscious awareness those things that I've lived through that I now have fear about, that I have this false belief that it's not safe or good for me to know. This memory or that trauma or that judgment. So whether it's the three early memories of conflict tool or the mind shifter targeted journaling tool or the worksheet process itself, all of these tools in one way or another are designed to either help me uncover the parts of my consciousness that I'm hiding from or in denial about, and or dismantle them.
Could you share with me again what the mindfulness tool is, or is it a series of different tools like the others you mentioned?
The mind shifter tool is what Michael Rice calls, what in therapy terms has been called for decades, targeted journaling. So you come up with a statement, as Michael talks about it, for which you have negative thoughts and beliefs, and they're in your unconscious. You may not even think that you've got negative thoughts and beliefs about it, but you come up with a statement, and you write it on the left side of a sheet of paper. and then you, on the left third, the way I do it, on the left third of a sheet of paper, and draw a line vertically down the paper one third of the way from the left margin toward the center. And then on the left side of the line, you write the mind shifter. And then you carve out a block of time. You know, when I first got exposed to this work, Michael said, block out an hour. Now he's up to like, I don't know, 3 days or whatever. He says 2 hours, 3 hours, 4 hours for the really intense worksheets or journaling sessions. And you block out that time where you're not going to be disturbed, you're not going to have music on, you're not going to have your phone going, and you let yourself respond. You got a stack of blank paper there in case you need it, and you write the mind shifter on the left side of the page, and you let your mind do a core dump, free association in Jung's terms. Just whatever pops into your mind, you write it on the right side of the page. And you keep doing that until you run out of stuff to write. And then, wherever you are, whether it's three lines down or three pages down, you rewrite the same statement on the left side of the page. So Michael gives the example of, you know, a lot of people have issues with money. So he says, here's a good mind shifter for somebody who has any kind of money issues. I always make twice as much money as I can spend. And you write that on the left side sheet of paper. You carve out an hour where you're not going to be disturbed. And you write that down, and you let your mind respond to that. Well, that's crazy. I've never made enough to pay my bills. And I've got three jobs, and I work really hard, and it's never enough, and I write until I'm dry. And then I rewrite the statement. I always make twice as much money as I can spend. Well, I never did, and my parents never did, and I came from poverty. I'm just writing this on the right side. Then I run dry and I write the same statement again. I always make twice as much money as I can spend. And then I draw a blank and I may not write anything. And I take a breath and I rewrite the statement on the left. And every time I write that statement, it's kind of like banging on a tuning fork and holding that, adding energy into that part of my unconscious or my consciousness that I'm not looking at. And eventually something's going to bubble up. Or a whole series of things will bubble up, and I'll write them on the right side of the page until my hour is up. And sometimes I get a tremendous rush of emotion, or I get a deep insight, and sometimes I don't. But I write about a series of things that come to mind. Over time, as I go back and read that, I'm probably going to see insights and connections that weren't there when I first wrote them down. And I might see a whole series of things that would be good targets for me to do reality management worksheets on. Or it might be a good thing for me to do the three early memories of conflict about. And these tools can be interwoven so that they keep providing me with insight to the part of my brain that I've been hiding from myself, part of my memory of life events that I haven't been willing to look at. Does that make sense?
Yes, definitely. And also the time management sheet and everything else, they're all part of the mindfulness tools. And because each one of them is going to maybe bring us into our mind. Or out of our mind into Christ's mind, or out of our mind into an opportunity to choose another way.
Well, the idea is that when I remove the false perception, and that's anything that's, you know, Michael's words would be anything that's based in hostility or fear, the more I remove that, the more clearly, easily, and directly I see the truth. And it's like what this Way of Mastery kept saying, well, the truth that's true always. Well, what's the truth that's true always? The truth is, just like Michael has at the top of his reality management worksheets, the truth is my true nature, my essential nature, my human life, my very being is this energy of creation, the energy of love. And every time I feel less than that, I feel fat or I feel ugly or I feel stupid or I feel shame or I feel inadequate, that's error in thought. And the more I can remove those errors in thought, the more easily, clearly, cleanly, directly I get experience of my true nature. I become consciously aware of the miracle of life expressing in, through, as, and around me in this moment. That's the goal of this work. That's the goal of the Way of Mastery. That's the goal of all the tools that Michael and Jeannie make available on the website. And everything else, every thought of myself as less than or inadequate or stupid or ugly or unlovable, every thought like that is error. And the more I remove the error, the more all that's left is the truth. And the truth is, you are a miracle of life expressing in form. And to put it bluntly, what's not to like about that?
We have to be pretty insane to love our misery more than that.
Well, and that would be the definition of insanity that Michael puts out there. Is any human mind that's occupied with something less than love is an insane mind.
Mm-hmm. Well, there's nothing like living in a little community of 300 in a valley that maybe holds 1,000 to 1,500, maybe not even 1,500, and get to practice that, because that is like a very large family. And it's pretty exciting. I am totally blissed out that I have the opportunity to be here in this community at this moment in my life. Again, for the third time, because we're trying to make it our permanent home, God willing, because life may have something better for us than we perceive that we don't know. But at the moment, this seems to be where both of us feel we need to be and where we can thrive and give service the most.
Well, congratulations. I'm glad you're finding yourself in that place at this time, and I hope it continues to be a lovely experience for you.
I guess that depends on us, doesn't it?
It certainly does, according to these teachings.
Well, once again, deep gratitude. I have one other awareness I would love to share with you, is that, you know, do we have time?
Yep.
Okay. I'll make it quick. I have heard gratitude as an attitude all of my life, just about, in some form or another. And I have a quote, and I can't find its source, because I gave it to one of my favorite uncles about 40 years ago, and I gave a card that had this quote on. And this is how I remember it. Gratitude is the deepest form of love. And I never forgot that quote. And I think the author was an E.M. Lowe, L-O-W-E, but I can't find that anywhere, and I've Googled it many times. But it was the other morning that I woke up, and that was on my mind. Gratitude is an attitude, the attitude of gratitude. And I suddenly realized that the reason I was, that I am struggling so much to be thankful is I've got the cart before the horse. And for me, what I realized that attitude was just basically a total life stance, because all our attitudes I perceive at this moment in time is our life stance. That has to be in place before the thankfulness can come spontaneously regardless of any outer circumstance, and that the thankfulness is actually the child of that attitude of gratitude. And so I thought I would share that with you because that was a very meaty lesson for me, and I'm still chewing on it.
Well, it reminds me of the statement about how so many people have been falsely taught that only those people who are given lots of grace end up having gratitude or gratefulness.
Wow.
And the truth is that when I generate and hold gratitude, it literally is the precursor of grace. And this is in a lot of different teachings. Abraham and, you know, all kinds of people that are teaching things about the law of attraction that aren't just focused on physical stuff and getting more stuff. They say, look, why do you think you want the fabulous relationship, the big house, the new car, the fancy stereo? When you slow it down, what you realize is you want those things because of how you believe it will make you feel. And the deeper, more connected teachings in this line of work will tell you the thing to do is learn how to generate that feeling. And then if you still want the thing, go get it. But if you go get the thing just because of what you believe it's going to help you feel, the shine is going to wear off that rose very quickly. You're going to be very disappointed. And if you generate the feeling that you want to have, the love, the gratitude, the contentment, if you do that first, then you demonstrate to yourself that you have the capacity to create your experience. So it works beautifully at many different levels. I feel good, I feel loving, I feel contentment, I feel gratitude, even though I don't have the fancy house and the big sports car and the ideal relationship. And then, if and when one of those things comes along, I'm not dependent upon that thing, the car, the house, the relationship, in order to have the good feeling. As Guy Finley says, the problem with that is if I wait to have the good feeling until I acquire this, that, or the other thing, then in the instant I acquire this thing, I also begin to generate fear. And I might have the satisfaction or the gratitude or the appreciation, but in the next breath, I'm going to have fear that what if I lose this? And if I lose this, then I lose the feeling. And Guy Finley points out the error in that thought process. How could the thing that brings you joy, contentment, satisfaction, also be the thing that brings you fear, that places you in fear? It can't be. So there's this convoluted perception that we have that I'm happy because I got the car, I got the house, I got the relationship. And that was never the case. That was just a fantasy of my thinking that's born out of the belief that I'm separate from other people and that I don't have the capacity to generate that good feeling within myself. So the wise person understands that he or she can generate the good feeling that they hope to have, that they want to have, that they know is their birthright. And then the things of the world, the houses, the cars, the stereos, the relationships, they come and go, and your peace is not disturbed because you understand that your peace doesn't come from outside. It doesn't come from the thing. This is one of the hardest things for me to get across to people in therapy is that in order to be available for a healthy relationship, you have to be completely content living your life alone. Because if I believe I can't be content until I'm in a loving relationship, I'm going to think my contentment comes from my interaction with somebody else. and I'm not available for a healthy relationship in that model. I'm looking for them to be the drug, the comfort for me, rather than me having comfort and wholeness and contentment and appreciation in me and bringing that into active participation with somebody else in a relationship. That's the only time I'm actually available for a healthy relationship.
Dr. Tim, you just translated a scripture from the Old Testament for me in a way that totally turns it inside out and gives total revelation to it for me. Thank you. And that statement, when I was an evangelical Christian, I used to read the Bible constantly. And in the Old Testament, it talks about a whoring after other gods. And I never understood that. And you just defined that for me in a turn of the kaleidoscope of your languaging helped me understand that in a way that brought no judgment, no condemnation if I were to do that. And also it made me realize that if you had the state of gratitude first and you decided, someone, decided that we wanted something and we went after it and we got it, then, because we are in a constant state of gratitude about being grateful for where we are, regardless, it also opens the opportunity for us to say, oh, maybe I don't need this after, maybe I don't want this after all, or maybe it doesn't matter. And in that case, then you're not going to have fear about losing it if you were, and also it frees you up to use that thing or relationship or situation for service to the good of the whole, which always includes oneself at the same time. And that's why I finally understood that Jesus was not the sacrificial lamb. There was no sacrifice about what he did. He chose that. It's like everything is weaving together. Thank you so much.
Well, you're welcome and deserving. Thank you for the comments and questions. You brought us to the end of our hour, so I'll mute you so you can listen to the second hour. And I'll remind us all that we come from love. We're made of this stuff we call love. We actually are love, and everything else is false. And I'll welcome Jeannie Rice, and I will turn on her microphone. Welcome, Jeannie Rice, if you are there.
I am. I was muted.
All right.
Thank you very much.
Welcome. Have a wonderful show.
Thanks. Appreciate it. So welcome, everybody, to the second hour of Mindshifters Radio. Today's Monday, January the 17th, 2022. I'm out of breath. I've been outside shoveling snow. Our calling number is 563-999-3581 and press 1. And that puts you in the queue to talk to us, and we'd love to hear your comments and questions because that makes this your show. And while we're waiting on Michael to get dialed in, I'll just make a couple of announcements. One is that tomorrow night, those of you who are in the Stillpoint Breathing monthly workshops, we're going to do last Tuesday. We didn't do the breath work because Michael was out of town and I had things going on with Dad, so we postponed it. So that will be tomorrow night. And it's from 7 to 9, the same time as we usually do, and it's the same link, Zoom link, as we do for Tuesday evenings. So that'll be tomorrow night. And so if you're part of the Stillpoint Breathing, please join us for that support group meeting. And then go to the App Store and download your app or update your app if you haven't already. There's lots of changes to it. And then the website, whyagain.org, and click on Start Here. Just go around and look at all the things that are out there and let us know if you find anything that needs the link changed or something else that you would like to be placed somewhere else where you can find it easier or whatever. And drop that line to Jeannie, J-E-A-N-I-E, at whyagain.org. Welcome, Michael.
Hey there, dear heart.
Welcome.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Thank you, thank you. And welcome to everybody. We're honored and delighted that you're here to be part of this conversation about this amazing first century Aramaic technology called forgiveness. So we get to continue this conversation. It's been going on for 10 years now, and you can access any and all of it freely on our website. If you just go to whyagain.org, you'll see in the middle of the page a microphone. Click on that microphone, drill down. It'll take you to the archives, and you can go all the way back. Let's see, we're getting ready to go into our 11th year now, aren't we, Jean? The anniversary is coming up pretty soon.
Yes, the last day of January.
Yeah. So a couple of weeks, we'll be into the 11th year of this ongoing conversation. And we started the other day with the worksheet from, or one of the worksheets in the app. We do have the world's only forgiveness app. And if you want to download it and use it, you know, it's the only app in the world that's designed for you to be able to go through step by step with guidance and instruction how to do the forgiveness process, how to walk through the original Aramaic idea of forgiveness. And so there are two different versions of the worksheet. And so we're now in the shorter version, the abbreviated version of the worksheet. And we've covered up to step three, or pardon me, up to step two. We're now starting on step three. And step three affirms once again, if you remember in step one, the first thing we invite you to do is acknowledge who you are. So in step 1A, I love who am. So you're recognizing yourself as the active presence of love. And, you know, probably one of the greatest mistakes that leads people to pain, to trauma, and to suffering is they identify themselves with what is false and not with what is true. So in step 3, we invite you once again to affirm who you are. So step 3, I love, want. Now, we've laid out in the first two steps the circumstances which our mind tells us are the cause of our upset. And remember that when we put the state of our mind on our circumstances, we're now stuck in a lie. It's called denial. When I think or speak as though something inside of me, something is happening outside of me, then I'm living in denial. And in order to be consistent, when I enter into denial, my mind cuts me off from the real cause of my turmoil, pain, suffering, or upset, and connects me to a lie. It's called perception. And perception is a construct of the mind. And our perceptions are constructed out of whatever is called into activity at any given moment in the mind. And when I reflect on the brilliance of the first century Aramaic forgiveness process, and I don't care where you look in the world, you're not going to find anything like this unless it went back to that first century Aramaic. I mean, I've just seen nothing that even comes close. But well, let's quote from some Harvard research first. It's one of the core pieces here. What they tell us in this Harvard research is that in a time frame where 10,000 brain cells are firing, there are 10,000 measurable units of electrical activity in the brain, that the max amount of data that goes into our perceptual construct in that time frame, which is about a 25th of a second, is 9 bits. Now, obviously, something has to determine which 9 bits of data are going to be used to build our perception. There's a whole lot more information going on in there, but what is it that shows up as our perception? What shows up is what's recruited into activity. Now, imagine that you want to build a pro football team, what are you going to do? You're going to go out and get yourself a recruiter. And the recruiter is going to go around to all of the schools, the high schools, look at football teams, and is going to call into activity the best players he can find, the ones who are going to serve his purpose best. You know, the ones who don't fit the team motto, the team vision, the team capability, don't get called into action by the recruiter. Well, that's a perfect analogy for goals. The recruiter that causes certain information within the mind and within genes to come into activity to form this world that we perception is literally our goals. Now, when I reflect on that, and after 50 years of working in this arena, when I reflect on that, the brilliance and the genius of this man Yeshua to understand that what not causes our perception, what causes our perception is the data held in mind, but what's recruited into formulating our perception is key. And of course, if you know what the recruiter is and you remove the recruiter, what's been called into activity, obviously, isn't going to function. It's going to have to collapse. Now, we've been taught by the world that we have this pair of windows called eyes, and we look out through these windows on the world and we see what's happening. That is one of the most ludicrous, foolish, ridiculous ideas that has ever existed. And yet, you talk to virtually every intellectual in the world, every wise man, every stupid man, they're all going to tell you, yeah, I saw that happen. I'm going to offer an alternative thought. You have never seen anything happen in your life, and you never will. Oh, wait a minute, Michael. I opened my eyes, and there was the picture. Have you ever thought to question that picture? You know, when you get down to the physics of it, and that's my background is physics, the eye is a receiver for light energy. Light energy comes into the eye, and according to the information carried on that light energy and the law of resonance, whatever's in resonance in the mind with that light energy, that light information coming into the eye, is called into activity. It responds to resonance. So the eye is a one-way valve. You can no more look out through your eyes than you could pull the wires off the back of a TV and look up through those wires and see out through the antenna. I mean, it's just silly, just plain silly when you really start to think about it, investigate it. Perception is a construct of the mind internally generated. Now, we could go to lots of sources of information to verify this, the latest in neurotechnology and such. One of the pieces of information we came across, back, I don't know, 4 or 5 years ago. You know, we've been teaching this for decades. But 4 or 5 years ago, we came across a book written by the CIA. Actually, it's still on their website. And you can go to CIA.gov, or you can actually go to whyagain.org, and we've got a link to it. And I have no idea how many millions of dollars the government spent to write this book on human intelligence. And there's a chapter in the book entitled Perception. If you go to the core research on perception, basically what the CIA was working to do was improve the intelligence gathering services that they utilize. Here's what they said, quote, "The mind does not perceive reality, the mind generates reality. Each person lives in their own reality." Whoa. So what happens? Light energy comes into the eye. Information fires in brain cells. In this one piece of research, we see that there are 10,000 brain cells firing, but only 9 bits recruited by our goals formulates this world that we see. And what happens is, unknowingly, You know, we're designed to be in relationship with the actuality of this energy field called life, but we substitute this construct called perception, and we put it in front of that and think that we're actually looking at the world, and what we're really looking at are constructs of our own mind. As the CI said, the mind does not record reality. The mind generates reality. And what causes the mind to use this data compared to that? What recruits the goal into activity? Or pardon me, what recruits the data into activity? It's your goals. Construct our offering is. Now, one of the questions we'll ask oftentimes in the Why Is This Happening to Me Again workshop is, how many of you have ever done something you regret? Of course, everybody kind of laughs and puts their hand up. So what we're going to do is we're going to invite you to think about a time, any time in your life, where you've done something that you regret. Okay? Now, what were you feeling when you did that behavior which you now regret? And you know what the answer is 100% of the time? The answer is always some form of hostility or fear. Rage, guilt, grief, whatever. Once in a while, somebody will say love, but when we investigate that, what they really mean is attachment or greed or possession. They really don't mean love. Oh, I love them, and that's why I, you know, did the bizarre thing they wanted me to do that I now regret. Well, it wasn't love. It was fear of them, the desire to, whatever it was. It wasn't human life that made you do that. So our offering is that when your perceptual construct is based on any form of hostility or fear, and this is a huge piece of learning to get, whenever that happens, your mind is lying to you. Hostility and fear indicate that the mind is using corrupt data. And your corrupt data mind is a lie. And what you want to do before you do anything is you want to collapse the lie. How do you collapse it? You cancel the goal. You get rid of the recruiter. The goal that pulls this particular set of hostility and fear-based datas into activity to formulate this perceptual construct, when removed, causes that perceptual construct to collapse. Now the lie collapsed in on itself gives you direct access to what underlies the lie. Otherwise, you know, people say, you made me mad, you made me sad. And they never stop to think that while I'm blaming them, I'm the one who's feeling what I'm feeling. And we've got a test in this work for determining whether or not what you're feeling is yours or not. How do you know if what you're feeling is yours or not? Now, this is a complex one. How do you know? You're feeling it. If you're feeling it, you know that it's yours. Now, if you put it into your brain's image of somebody else, you can pretend it's about them, but the truth is it's your physiology that this energy is moving in. It's you that's feeling it, and if it's based on hostility or fear, your mind is a liar. There is no truth in it. So what you want to do is to collapse its activity. And so the first step to doing that is to recognize precisely what the recruiter is, that is, what the goal is. So step number three, I affirm who I am again. And in 1B, we named whoever the object of attention was about. So if I say, you know, Bill made me angry, Bill is my object of attention, B1B. So 1A, I'm acknowledging who I am as love, and 1B, I'm acknowledging who the object of attention is that my mind is blaming my state on. So I love, want 1B2. And here you want to state in positive words what the recruiter is for this pained perception. What's your goal for number 1B? So think about the ideal outcome for this situation. What is it you want? Now, this is a really important step, because if you don't identify your goal correctly and you do what the Aramaic forgiveness process says you must do, and that is cancel it, the perceptual construct isn't going to fully collapse. So the more exact and specific the actual operating goal in your mind is, the faster that construct is going to collapse in you, and the deeper your access is going to be to the underlying pain. And when you bring active present love forward, and you bring underlying pain forward, when the two meet, the pain begins to dissolve. And that's where the forgiveness process happens. So what's the goal that I hold for this object of attention? And then, so you've identified the goal, and then there's actually a little trick that's added here so that I can, and then you'll find that there's still another goal. So I want Bill to cooperate with me so that I can win. I want Bill to pay me what he owes me so that I can pay my bills. So there are actually oftentimes multiple goals operating in this step, and we thank Magda for bringing this particular idea into the worksheet. And thank you to everyone over the years. You know, if you go back to my book and look in the first few pages, I do an acknowledgement of some of the people who impacted this work over the decades of developing it before I wrote the book. I don't know how many names there are now, 400 or 500 different people that I acknowledge there. And, you know, this has been a community corroborative effort to bring this work of forgiveness forward. And I certainly thank and appreciate everyone, and in particular for this idea. Magda, if you're listening, we cherish you and appreciate you. So what's the goal? I want Bill to pay me what he owes me so that I can pay my bills. So that's step 3 in the short form of the worksheet from the app, which you can find at in your app store if you typed in the words Heartland Aramaic Forgiveness. And then number 4, what I'm looking to do is to reconnect to the presence of love. So I choose to reconnect to my original being instead of my upset. If we've become identified with a hostile or fearful or victim identity in our minds, then we've identified with a falsehood. I want to change that identification and recognize that if I'm identifying with the weakness of some form of hostility or fear, I've lost my connection to my source, to my original being. So I choose to reconnect to my original being, love, instead of my upset. And you'll see a set of brackets there for the rose and the butterfly story. And the rose and the butterfly story is one that I love to tell at this stage of doing the Why Is This Happening to Me Again workshop, because it just so powerfully illustrates this idea. So let's imagine we have a rose and a butterfly. We give them each an ego. They meet. They fall in love. They have this wonderful time together, this wonderful relationship. And one day, the butterfly up and flies away. The rose, knowing that the love of the butterfly is the most important thing in its life, uproots itself to give chase. What's going to happen to the rose? It's going to die. Why does it die? Because it made something more important than being connected to its source. Yes, the relationship with the butterfly is important, but its connection to the earth and its source is more important. We're offering to you that what the world hasn't taught us is that your connection to your true being is more important than any goal you could think about achieving. If you uproot and lose that, in pursuit of anything other than that, then, well, it's interesting. Of Course in Miracles labels those things that we chase as trifling treasures, and it suggests you put those trifling treasures away. And when you do, then perception, the recruited data, when you cancel the goal that recruited that data, collapses. And when it collapses in on itself and gives you access to its root. You know, a good visual for that is to, you know, we watched back in 9/11, we watched these towers collapse into their own footprint. That's what happens to perception. a free fall right into its own footprint, and now you have access to the underlying cause of the pain or trauma that you put into your brain's image of other people and think that they're the problem and they're the cause. And then there's a reminder, once again, to breathe. Because when we shut the breath down, we disconnect from source. And we inhibit the movement of truth within us. Number 5A. In order to collapse my false reality, be liberated from my hostility and fear, actual mind and the truth about me and my object of attention, I cancel. You see in Aramaic it says shebag. The word forgive in Aramaic is shebag or shabak, and it literally means to cancel. I cancel my goal for number 1B, and you copy exactly from number 3. And when you're doing the worksheet in the app populates it. So when you answer number 3, that will automatically show up in number 5. And so you're going to cancel the goal for number 1B. So if you were doing a written worksheet, you'd be copying it longhand. The app populates it automatically. And Jeannie, all those little things that you put in the app are awesome. So why am I canceling this goal? Am I canceling this goal because, you know, this person with a desire for this person to pay me what they owe me is a bad goal? No, that's a wonder. You know, somebody owes you something. It's reasonable to say, I'd like you to pay me. You don't cancel it because there's anything wrong with that goal. Well, Michael, why would I cancel it? Because when you recognize that if you put a goal into your mind and it recruits hostility and fear from your past, then you'll end up living in a perceptual construct from the past, and you'll live the lie. And people do that again and again and again. And you can, you know, if you go into the app, if you look, there's a link that says more, and if you click that, there are links. And one of the things you can do is you can download the book, Why Is This Happening to Me Again, directly from the app. It's freebie. So, in step 5, I'm canceling the goal for one reason and one reason only. I'm in an hostility and fear-based fake reality, false reality. I want to be liberated from my hostility and fear, get back to the truth. So I cancel my goal for bill to pay me. Now, when you realize that underlying this what we call the 9-bit mind, and some people say, well, the research says it's 11 bits. Well, so it's 9 bits, 11 bits, it's 15 bits, it's 20 bits. We're not here to argue about, you know, the something that will probably never be fully established. We just want to make the point that the conscious awareness in the mind is a small fraction of what's going on under the surface. In fact, like an iceberg, if you listen to some psychologists, they'll tell you that as much as 98% of your mind's activity is unconscious. And my offering is, we're not designed to have an unconscious mind. That's not how it's designed to work. The unconscious mind is an artificially created state that we're not designed to live in. And, you know, in the ancient teachings, when they said the veil of the temple must be rent in twain, they were not talking about a purple curtain in a church. The temple is your body-mind unit. The veil of the temple, as opposed to a purple curtain in a church, this body-mind unit is your temple, and the veil is the barrier between the subconscious and the unconscious. The artificial barrier that we have built in order to stay away from, in order to hide from ourselves, what it is that we don't want to deal with. And so what we're doing is inviting that veil to open by using the breath and touching into the truth. And so once again, in step 5, there's a reminder to breathe. Now, recognizing there's much more under the surface, if I have, you know, it's kind of metaphorical, but if I have a 9-bit mind and there are 10,000 bits of data moving under the surface, how do I ever become aware of that? How do I ever deal with that? Well, there's not enough space to deal with it. But what Yeshua taught 2,000 years ago is that there is a power in you that can deal with it. It came with the package. It was like a package gift that you were given. In Aramaic, it was called Ruach HaKodesh. Ruach HaKodesh, I don't say it quite properly. It's one of those guttural words where you say it and you spit all over people because it comes right from back deep in the throat. Ruach HaKodesh in Aramaic is properly defined as a feminine elemental force in us that undoes the effects of ours and teaches us the truth. Now, I know that our male-oriented society and our male-oriented churches have made it a male thing. He, the Holy Spirit. In other words, that's the translation the Greeks gave it. Got nothing to do with the disembodied spirit being, and it sure is not a he in Aramaic. In Aramaic, the word that describes this elemental force is gendered feminine. So a feminine elemental force in us, and the two main things that feminine elemental force will do if you want it to. Now, you've got free will. It's never going to interfere. But if you want it to, if you invite it into activity, it will, one, undo the effects of your errors. It literally has the power to reach out through all of the creation, and any particular issue that you're willing to work through energetically will be loosed in the world. Undoes the effects of your errors. And two, if you're willing to listen and receptive, it will directly teach you the truth. Now, it's hard for it to directly teach you the truth when your mind's trying to explain to you that this person is acting just like your mother did, just like your father did. They're doing it to you again, so you better get your defenses up and puke on them, because if you don't, they'll get you. You know, if your mind's doing all that garbage, really hard for this elemental force to come in and say, excuse me, you notice you've been through this 87 different times with 42 different people, and you're the only one that was there. This is about you, and here's what you need to heal, and I can help you with it. It's going to be hard to hear that if you're yelling and screaming and raging in your hostility or fear about how it's all everybody else's fault that this is happening to you again. You know, the point at which you go, I've been through this 87 different times with 42 different people, and I'm the only one that was here every time. Maybe this is about me is a really important point in your process. So once you recognize that, and when you look back through the generations, how much unconscious data is there? So in 5B, it's a space to invite that power into activity. Now, I choose, and you'll see that the definition is there as you look through the app at this particular worksheet, in brackets, in Aramaic, Ruach HaKodesh. I usually just shorten that to Ruach. I invite Ruach to incline me toward healing, to restore me to my original nature, love, assist me in keeping love present, and help me come into direct conscious relationship with and remove the dissociated projected parts of my carbon-based memory. So there's several requests that we suggest you make each time you do a worksheet. And you'll see that it's shortened CBM, carbon-based memory is shortened to CBM. What is CBM? Well, if you talk to a modern-day physicist and they check out, or a physiologist, and check out your structure, they'll tell you the base element in your body is carbon. Carbon is an atom that is made up of 6 electrons, 6 protons, 6 neutrons. Maybe when they said the anti-love, the antichrist had a number, and that was 666, maybe they knew what they were talking about. So, you know, you look at any particular person in any particular situation or conflict, you know, you got a dozen people standing around, and let's say somebody comes into the room and does some horrible thing. One person runs off in rage, another one runs off in fear, another one sits there crying, another one is immobilized in fear. If the action that person took were the cause, it would be the same effect in everybody. Obviously, each person has in them a past that formulates the rules for them of behavior and perception. And that past tends to work against living as the truth of who we are. If living in the mind of love, if we look at the religious language, and if we go back to the Aramaic, there's nothing religious about it. They talk about the mind of Christ. And the word Christ is not a religious term. It's not the name of a man. It's actually the name of an office. You know, very much like, you know, if I ran for mayor tomorrow and I won, you would call me Mayor Rice. You wouldn't call me, you know, and you wouldn't think that mayor was my name. You'd know that it was the name of an office that I hold. So this man, Yeshua, who became called the Christ, held an office. And the office was that of one who had awakened. By the way, a place you're invited into, the same as he was. It isn't an exclusive space. If you listen to him, now you listen to his followers, you get a different story. But everybody's invited to go there. So what I'm doing is I'm asking this elemental force for several things. I want my natural inclination. If my natural inclination is to go to look at, you know, the dark side, the glass is half empty, they're going to get me, you know, victimhood. I want to upgrade my mind. So in climbing toward healing, remind me and restore me to my original nature, which is love. Assist me in keeping love present. And help me to commit a direct conscious relationship with and remove the dissociated and projected parts of my mind. So these are the things we're asking for. And, you know, if you come up with another request, you're certainly welcome to fill it in. But they're the basic minimums that we suggest. So that's 5B. Then, in number 6, and we're just asking for the truth of how do you feel. So number 6, I now feel better, worse. And it could be either. We're not going to suggest that every time you do a worksheet, you're going to go, hey, it feels wonderful. Actually, if you collapse the surface mind's projections, you may find deeper parts of your mind that are hidden from you that don't feel very good. Remember, we were back in step 2. I'm willing to go through the symptoms of healing. I'm willing to open and go into those hidden parts of myself and process them. And sometimes you're going to spend a significant amount of time in those parts of your mind. You know, if you've got decades and generations of rage and hate-filled rhetoric going on in your world and in your life and in your family system and in your culture, and you just take a look at the culture today, and everybody's got a fair share of it, or most people have got a fair share of it, don't expect that to be over the first second. It's a process. And you're going to spend time in contact with those hidden parts of your own mind. Willingness is the thing that will move us most quickly. When that starts to come up and people go, oh, well, I don't want to feel this, I don't want to feel it. You just listen to their voices. You can hear their whole energy field starting to shut down, the breath shutting down. That person's going to spend probably years and years and years in that trauma posture. The person who steps into willingness, this is what we'd like to call cosmic grease, will tend to move through those things much more quickly. That's why we've got a statement in there about willingness. So how do you feel? And when I look at the situation that I described up in number 1, B and C, and again, the app will populate that for you. It'll put your answer in there. Take a look at it. And how does the situation look to you? And over the years of, you know, 4 decades, it's been 5 decades of developing this work, but it was about 4 decades ago that I started to work with the Aramaic. The most common response that I've gotten from people through the years is, I can't understand why I was so upset about that. You know, it's like no big deal. I mean, here's somebody who's maybe spent years in trauma, and they think it was about that something, but when they canceled the goal and they found the real root of what they were in trauma about, and they processed through the trauma, all of a sudden there's no trauma left. So they look at that situation, it's like, I don't even understand why I was ever upset about that. Well, here's the truth. You were never upset about it. Your mind lied to you and told you you're upset about that. You just had upset in your mind that had been unresolved. And the idea of this work is to resolve and finish that upset, that disturbance. You're not designed to live out of that. So it takes time to process through it. And then, now that you've opened that space, what we're going to invite you to do is go back and look at the goal that you held in number three. You know, it was for Bill to have paid me. And then I want to look at time in my life where I violated that goal with myself or someone else. And oftentimes people go back and remember, let's see if that was the goal. They might go back to a time when they cheated somebody and, you know, maybe felt guilty. Now all of a sudden somebody cheats them and they want that person to feel guilty. They're just projecting their guilt. They're just trying to get somebody else to play it out so they don't have to deal with it. The idea of this work is to own it. And when you own something in the presence of love, you get to process through it. And remember, in this work, we define processing as the ability to keep love conscious, active, and present when something less than love comes up. So just make note of, and this sometimes can be a very insightful step, when did I violate that goal that I held in number three for this other person? Just make note of it. And, you know, that might open another worksheet for you. And then number seven, in number 1B, so I'm going back and looking at who the object of attention was in this worksheet. And again, the F will populate that for you. So if I'm working on Bill, Bill's name will appear in the blank in number one, in number seven. So Bill, I acknowledge us for creating truth, perfect love, and so what I'm looking to do at this point is to move my relationship with Bill and my own mind to a place of truth and a place that out of the Aramaic was called perfect love. And you remember they said perfect love casts out fear. What does that mean? Well, without a big explanation, there are other shows where we spend a lot of time on this topic. In the frontal lobes of a brain, there's a filter in the brain. There's a filter called Rachma. In the back of the brain, there's a filter called Kuba. When those two filters are active in the mind, as opposed to the hostility and fear filters, that mind was said to be in perfect love. And a mind that's connected in that way can't produce an hostility or fear-based reality. So perfect love casts out fear. Joining with whoever I'm doing this worksheet on, Bill, I acknowledge us for creating truth, perfect love. And then I want to step into what's a loving goal that I'm willing to take action on in regard to whoever I'm doing this worksheet on. So my loving goal might be, so Bill, I can hear that you've had a rough time and you don't have money and you can't pay me, so I'm going to work toward treating you with compassion. Yeah, I still have need for my money and I still have upset about it, and maybe I'll do some more worksheets and clean some of that up, but I'm willing to hear that you've had a rough time this year and you're just not in a position to take care of it. So I commit to having compassion for you and understanding. And that would be the completion of this shorter form of the worksheet. And so completing that, what I'd like to do, Jeannie, is just check and see if there's anybody in the phone queue with a hand up or anything happening in the chat room in regard to questions about this particular worksheet. So do we have anybody out there with any questions, sweetie? And if you're out there listening and some step didn't make sense or you needed a more complete explanation, please push 1 on your keypad, or if you're on one of those stations where we can't see you on our control panel, our call-in number is 563-999-3581. If you call that number, you'll be listening to the show. And then if you push 1, that'll raise a hand in the phone queue and we'll be having a conversation. So, Jeannie, do we have anybody out there with a hand up in the phone queue or anything happening in the chat room?
No, it is all quiet. We got several people on the switchboard, but no hands are up. Yep.
Cool. Okay. Awesome. Well, we'll take a minute. Anybody out there, any questions about anything we've talked about with this worksheet? Any of the principles behind it? Is it all making sense? And if so, then we'll complete that. And then we'll step into, there's a second worksheet in the app, and I'd like to talk about that a little bit. It's the more complete 7-step process that we go through in the workshop, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? If you take a look at it, there are more words on the page, and there's a reason for that. It's because it's a little more in-depth. And actually, if you go back to our website, whyagain.org, and you go to the upper left-hand corner, there's a link that says Start Here. And if you click there, it'll open up a place where there are several different worksheets. You know, this worksheet's been in development for 40-plus years, and it's been tested and tested and tested. I've tried different ideas in it, different steps in it. And if I integrated every step that we've used over the years, the page would probably be 4 pages long. And so there are different shades of meaning in some of the steps in the different worksheets. So you might just investigate them, try them out. We've had different people. Somebody's got this one that's their favorite. Somebody else, this one works better for their mind. So just, you know, you're welcome to have a look at that and stick with these and never look at any others. But you might take a look at that and you'll see that there's there are other ideas that can augment the forgiveness process. So in the longer form of the worksheet, we call it, if you look at the top of it, the wake-up sheet. Change your mind, change your life. And you'll see the definition of forgiveness, the tool for waking up from and changing my reality. It's been called the wake-up sheet. And it's also been called the reality management sheet. So my reality is any perceptual output constructed by my mind. There's a premise that goes along with the worksheet. You'll see up at the very top, my essential nature, my human life, my very being is love. And if you ever forget that, just hold a newborn. The goal of this internal forgiveness work wake-up sheet is to empower me to remove fear and or hostility and return me to the direct experience of love 24/7, 365. So the idea of this is to process through, you know, generations and generations and generations of inherited hostility and fear. Jeannie's working on her book is entitled Healing the Generations One Breath at a Time. And, of course, the forgiveness process is an important part of that. The steps are similar to the worksheet we just went through, so this will be kind of a review, but there are some accent points in this sheet that take the mind to different places. You start out, number 1A, as with the other sheet, acknowledging who you are. I, Michael, who am love. Experiencing, and here you identify what your emotions are. So maybe in a particular situation, I'm experiencing some form of hostility or fear. If I have different words for emotions that come up around a particular situation, I want to do a separate worksheet for each of those emotions. So I'm just going to use one word in this blank, in number 1B. And so I'm using a separate worksheet for each emotion that I'm experience. And sometimes our emotions, are pre-verbal. It's before we had words for them. So sometimes it can be difficult to put them into words. And so there's a little box there for you to draw your emotions. So sometimes if you can't quite get it into words, a picture will do. You know, anger might look like a lightning bolt. Sadness might look like an eye with a teardrop falling out of it. And then a reminder in that box where you've drawn that picture is, if I'm in pain, my thinking is in error. If I'm engaged in a thought disorder, I've got some sort of pain or suffering going on, and I can access my thought disorders and remove them and remove the root of my pain and suffering. I can be restored to love. Then there's the reminder, hostility and fear are from internal corrupt data indicate my mind's use of sustained incoherence to build this disturbing internal construct. Sustained incoherence is a term that was coined by a man named David Bohm. David Bohm was a physicist who actually worked in Einstein's laboratory for a time period. He also worked on the building of the atomic bomb. He did some of the math that allowed them to be able to build that atrocity. He also worked in the arena of the mind and human intelligence. And he defined sustained incoherence as using the same incorrect data again and again to try to solve a problem that it couldn't solve, in essence. So, you know, if I'm trying to blame you in order for me to stop feeling bad, I'm in sustained incoherence because my feeling bad is a product of an energy that's moving in me. Now, I can, you know, lie to myself and say, no, I'm feeling this way because of Bill. No, I'm not feeling this way because of what Bill did. I'm feeling this way because of what's moving in me. And if what's moving in me is causing me pain, I have every right to remove that energetic pattern. And the tool for doing that is called forgiveness. So if I'm in pain, if hostility and fear are active in me, it's time for me to recognize that this is sustained incoherence. And the construct that I'm experiencing is internal. My denial. So here I'm now teaching my mind another piece of information. It's my denial that causes my carbon-based memory to displace myself as my essence, you know, my experience of myself as love, and tells me that my emotions are caused by my trigger. So my trigger is, again, as in the other worksheet, who's the object of attention? Who am I saying? You know, we'll go back to Bill. Bill made me mad. So Bill is my trigger. Bill is not the cause of my mad. You know, again, notice if I've been through that mad 87 different times with 42 different people, it's about me. It's not about Bill. But when it comes up in me, I have the opportunity to remove it. While it's hiding down in my unconscious, I'm never going to be able to remove it. But when I can own it, I can work through it. So it's my denial that causes this memory bank, this past in me, to create the experience of myself as something other than love. And that somebody else is causing this energy that's less than love to move in me. My story, my reality is that number 1C, so you're going to name once again, here's Bill is going into number 1C, that first blank. And then I'm going to tell my story. Bill didn't pay me all the money that he owed me. I'm reminded to breathe because when disturbing energy moves in the average person tries to shut down the awareness of that by shutting down the breath. So you'll see the reminder here to breathe. And then you see there's a little hand that points over to the right. A good question to ask yourself is, if they're the one with the pain, if they're the one with the problem, why am I the one with the pain? Doesn't make sense. If I'm in pain, I need to allow myself to become aware that I have a problem. But if I live in the denial game, they made me sad, they made me angry, they hurt me, I can never own, and therefore I can never get rid of whatever that turmoil or pain is. So simply a good question to ask yourself at this stage after doing number 1B is, if they're the one with the problem, why am I the one with the pain? So we completed number 1C, now we're going to go on to D. The truth is, only my thoughts cause my emotional upset. And there's a reminder there to breathe. Now, let's take a moment out of the worksheet And I'm going to just ask you to allow yourself to go through a series of feelings. Let yourself start out and let yourself feel sadness. Notice where you're feeling the sadness in your body. Take a breath. Breathe into that area in your body and let that sadness, fear, rage, whatever it is, let it soften. Purposely, consciously, focus and bring love into that area as you breathe. Now, let yourself feel anger for a moment. And as you allow yourself to feel anger, notice again in your physiology where you're feeling the anger. Allow yourself to breathe into that area and bring the flow of present love into that area of your structure. Let your mind be restored to love. And now for a moment, allow yourself to feel fear. Once again, notice where in your physiology you're feeling the fear. Take a breath. Open up and let go of the fear. And once again, with the breath, bring love into that area of your tissue structure. Now, if you were to just observe, what did you do in order to go from sadness to anger to fear? If you really take a look, what you did was you changed your thought. When I said feel sadness, you had a certain thought, and that reflected as sadness in your physiology. When I said feel fear, you used a different thought. When I said feel anger, there was still a different thought. Thoughts cause me to feel, not what people do. People do things, and in doing them, they resonate my hidden thoughts, but it's my thoughts that cause my feelings, not the things that happen in my world. When I can acknowledge that, then D becomes very apparent. The truth is, only my thoughts cause my emotional upset. I want to breathe. And then, in the same way as we said, whatever your emotion is, you do a different worksheet on each emotion, you do a different worksheet on each thought that you uncover. So the thought, again, using a separate wake-up sheet for each thought, that I used to cause my emotion in 1B is. So if I'm angry at Bill and I tell myself it's because he didn't pay me, I'm telling myself a lie. I'm angry because there's a thought moving in me that causes this anger. So I want to identify the thought behind my anger. And maybe, you know, the thought is he's a cheat. Then the final step in number one E is, I want to punish 1C by, and myself by. So, usually, when there's disturbance or upset, people have a punishment thought, and it's usually about somebody else, but oftentimes about themselves, and oftentimes simultaneous. So if there's a punishment thought about yourself, you know, oh, geez, I'm so stupid. I never should have loaned Bill that money in the first place. I really, you know, I guess I deserve this. Well, that's self-punishment. That's an error in thought. I want to clean that up. Hostility and fear are always, always, always reflective of errors in thought. Now, you've gone through, so you've forward, I want to punish Bill by, you know, doubling what he owes me and myself by just calling myself stupid. And you'll see at the end of that line, there's a little hand that points to another box. And verbal, this particular little box introduces the concept of verbal release. Most people created their trauma through trauma thoughts and words linked to trauma. By utilizing words to generate release, you can start to loosen these energy patterns and let them go. And so what we suggest is that you do a verbal release on each step from 1A to E. So if you take a look in that box, I release and surrender myself, and there's a little checkbox there, to love. I surrender my emotions to love. It is my hostility and fear. I surrender Bill, number 1C, to love. I surrender my story. People always cheat me, to love. I surrender my thoughts to love. And I surrender my punishment to love. So here I'm taking each step of this first piece of the worksheet, number one, and doing a verbal release of it and letting it go to love. And then once again, you'll see a little hand that points over to the right. And, you know, once people start to work through a particular mental construct of pain, if they don't realize it, they may just go back. Okay, I got rid of that thing with Bill, and they'll go turn around and do it with, you know, Harry the next day, or Mary or Hortense or somebody else. So being conscious of that, there's another goal to be canceled here, another step of release. And that is, if you look off to the right, and I cancel my need to be right and make up another story out of these brain cells to hallucinate proof that my fear and hostility-based story, my reality, is true. So I'm not only letting go of the goal, you know, in that last worksheet, we did two goals. I want this from Bill so that I can, and there's a second goal. You're canceling both of those. And here we're taking a third goal, and that is letting go of the need to be right and make up another story based on this. Number 1A, or pardon me, number 2A, I choose to love truth. Now, again, we actually need to change the verbiage on this particular step because we're shifting out of the error of love being a verb and recognizing it's a noun. So you can't love truth. You can't love anything. What we're looking to do here is to recognize that I want to honor truth, and by so doing, I get to experience myself as love. So we're going to change that particular thought to I honor truth. And we're just about to completion point for today's show. Boy, that's gone by quickly. And so what we'll do tomorrow, and if there are no questions, is we'll pick this up and finish this worksheet in tomorrow's show. So we appreciate you being here. Praise for you to have the best year yet of your eternal life, and appreciate you deeply for being with us. Blessings.
Thank you for listening to Mind Shifters Radio with Dr. Michael Rice and myself, Jeannie Rice, and Dr. Tim Hayes and Michelle Pichet, as we present the first century Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. We are here for 2 hours every Monday through Friday from 12 noon to 2 o'clock Eastern Time on Mind Shifters Radio. For more information on Aramaic forgiveness, please visit www.whyagain.org. That's www.whyagain.org.